Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay. Continuing our discussion on the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 1. The very, very important pastime of Krishna's birth. Krishna's appearance, because he's Aja, unborn, yet he appears to take birth. So it's Krishna's appearance, which is... Okay, now, Canto 10, Chapter 10, text number 25. The potency of the Lord, known as Vishnu Maya, who is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will also appear with Lord Krishna. This potency, acting in different capacities, captivates all the worlds, both material and spiritual. At the request of her master, she will appear with her different potencies in order to execute the work of the Lord. Now, at one time, Srila Prabhupada was asked, you know, who is Subhadra? And Prabhupada answered, she's Durga. So we're going to discuss the Vishnu Maya Durga. Now, here in the translation of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear that this Vishnu Maya acts in different capacities and it captivates both the material and spiritual worlds. In the Krishna book, Prabhupada says that this Vishnu Maya, with whom all the conditioned souls are enamored, would also appear by the order of the Supreme Lord just to execute his purpose. So, in a very general sense, when we ask who is Krishna's sister, we can say she's Durga, the goddess of the material world. So that's how Prabhupada puts it in the Krishna book, that she's the energy of the Lord with whom all the conditioned souls are enamored. The spiritual aspect is something a little bit more difficult for people to understand, and generally we'd introduce that concept next. So our first answer would be that Krishna's sister is the Durga, or the material energy of the Lord.
Sometimes we say Krishna's maidservant, like Maya is considered as Krishna's maidservant.
Yes, yeah. Mm. Yeah, that Maya, Krishna's maid servant, the energy of the Lord, who fulfills the will of the Lord, maid servant. So, maid servant meaning subordinate to the will of the Lord. Yeah. So, of course, that's the. Can you get this? Yes. Now, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that the Lord has many different potencies and with different names such as Yogamaya and Mahamaya. And in this section, Srila Prabhupada uses those terms, yoga maya and maha maya, a lot. And he says, ultimately, however, the Lord's potency is one. Exactly as electric potency is one, although it can act both to cool and heat. The Lord's potency acts both in the spiritual and material worlds. In the spiritual world, the Lord's potency works as yogamaya, and in the material world, the same potency works as mahamaya. Exactly as electricity works in both a heater and a cooler. And as we said at the end of this chapter, there's additional notes. And there it describes that because the material potency and yogamaya mingle in the Lord's appearance, they are described as ekanamsa. Sometimes ekanamsa is interpreted to mean without differentiation. So, therefore, without differentiation means it is actually the one energy, or it is yoga maya. And the Lord's yoga maya can then expand as maha maya to perform a different type of function. Otherwise, we don't distinguish. So, you know, we wouldn't consider that yogamaya, we wouldn't consider that the Lord's one energy is material energy. We would consider the Lord's one energy is a spiritual energy. They can act in a material way as well. Now, and this is how the material and the spiritual energies act. So Prabhupada goes on to say in the purport, in the material world, this potency working as Mahamaya acts upon the conditioned souls to deprive them more and more of devotional service. So keeping them in the bodily concept of life, associated with the material modes of nature, and thus forgetting that they're the eternal part and parcel of the Lord's spiritual energy. Now, when the conditioned soul becomes liberated, however, he thinks himself an eternal servant of Krishna, Jivera Svarupa Haya, Krishnera Nityadas. When he comes to that position, the same potency acting as yogamaya increasingly helps him become purified and devote his energy to the service of the Lord. So sometimes we've heard that, you know, when one becomes very determined in their Krishna consciousness, that maya actually helps the devotee. But when she's actually helping the devotee, she's actually more in the mood of yogamaya. Yeah. In either case, whether the soul is conditioned or liberated, the Lord is supreme. And then he quotes his verse from Bhagavad Gita 9:10. It is by the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that the material energy, Mahamaya, works upon the conditioned soul. And he quotes Bhagavad Gita 3:27. Being under the influence of the being under the false ego. And thinking themselves independent from the Lord. But when the conditioned soul becomes liberated by executing devotional service, he's given a greater and greater chance to relish a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in different transcendental statuses such as Dasya, Sakya, Vatsala and Madhurya rasas. So when Prabhupada, in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is talking about in Bhagavad Gita 3:27, 9:10, Krishna is referring to Mahamaya. And then then it goes on to say that thus the Lord's potency, Vishnumaya, has two different features, Avaranika and Unmukha. When the Lord appeared, his potency came with him and acted in different ways. She acted as Yogamaya with Yashoda, Devaki, and other intimate relations of the Lord, and she acted in a different way with Kamsa, Salva, and other Asuras. So, as Prabhupada puts it, by the order of Lord Krishna, his potency Yogamaya came with him and exhibited different activities according to the time and circumstances. See? So, when we say the energy of the Lord that appeared, so in other words, the Lord, as we'll see in further chapters, the Lord asked his potency Yogamaya to appear and to do certain activities, transfer Krishna from Devaki to Yashoda, etc., from Balaram from Devaki to Rahini. So we see that the energy that came with the Lord was actually Yogamaya. But for other purposes of the Lord, that Yogamaya, when she then went to the prison of Kamsa, she acted in her Mahamaya vicha as Maya, because then she had to deal with Kamsa, a materialist, an atheist. So as you see, she acts in a different way with Kamsa, Salva, and Asuras. That means she acts as Mahamaya. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita 9.13, when Krishna says, Mahatmanas tu mampata devim prakriti masrita, the Mahatmas who fully surrendered to the Lord are directed by Yogamaya, whereas the Duratmas, those who are devoid of devotional service, are directed by Mahamaya. So in Bhagavad Gita 9.13, when Krishna speaks of the Mahatmas, he is speaking, you know, being under the protection of the Lord's divine energy, Devim Prakriti, he is speaking of Yogamaya. And you know, the verse there, so let's have a look at 9.13. So as you see, Bhagavad Gita is presenting all this information, but in the Krishna book, we're getting a far more detailed look of exactly what does it mean to be protected by the Yogamaya, and what does it mean to be under the influence of Mahamaya. Yeah, so text 13. Those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. See, so in the purport, being marginal potency, as soon as the living entity is freed from the control of material nature, he is put under the guidance of the spiritual nature. The guidance of the spiritual nature is called Devi Prakriti, divine nature. So when one is promoted in that way, by surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one attains to the stage of great soul or Mahatma. And then it mentions the different qualifications of the Mahatmas. Now, it describes there that such a Mahatma or great soul develops through association with other Mahatma pure devotees. Pure devotees are not even attracted by Krishna's other features, such as the four-armed Mahavishnu. They are simply attracted by the two-armed form of Krishna. They are not attracted to other features of Krishna, nor are they concerned with any form of a demigod or of a human being. They meditate only upon Krishna in Krishna consciousness. They are always engaged in the unswerving service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. So when it says there that, devotees you know, they're not attracted by Krishna's other features, means that not like the Sahajas, that they won't discuss Bhagavad Gita thinking that it's something inferior, or you know, they'll only discuss Krishna Lila with the Gopis. It's not like that. But when they're discussing, you know, by preaching and teaching people about Krishna, and therefore they're discussing Vishnu and the different avatars, they're discussing that, you know, the mood of the pure devotee is, I'm teaching you about Krishna because that's all I want to talk about and think about. For you to understand Krishna, I have to teach you about Mahavishnu, like that. But because, you know, it is, they're only interested in Krishna, even if they're, say, celebrating the different festivals of Lord Ramchandra, or, you know, teaching Bhagavad Gita, you know, 10th chapter, how everything is just a, you know, manifest from a spark of the Lord's splendor as Vishnu. When the devotees worship the Shalagram, there may be Korma Shalagram, you know, we have Sankishan, you know, Varaha, Sudarshan. They're saying, you know, these avatars, you know, it is Krishna. And they're manifesting a certain, you know, aspect of Krishna. Whatever, they only see whatever is manifest, oh, this is, you know, a quality of Krishna, an opulence of Krishna. Not like the Sahajas, you know, that don't discuss other things, thinking somehow that is, you know, that is Krishna consciousness. So, you know, you see with Srila Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada gave a lecture on nearly, I think mostly, nearly the entire Bhagavad Gita. You know, there were certain sections he missed, but sometimes in his, so when he was giving, he gave lectures on the Gita in certain early days, San Francisco, New York, and then Bombay, and he covered huge sections, and then other places around the world he, you know, managed to give lectures. If you see his lectures on Bhagavad Gita, he covers quite a lot of them. And sometimes in some lectures, especially in the early days, he would cover sometimes a third of a chapter, you know, verse after verse to make sure. So, but, you know, he would, so therefore he would discuss, you know, the first chapter describing who are the people on the battle of Kurukshetra, and he would speak about that. Because all of that is related, the whole Mahabharata, you know, which is little snippets about Krishna, but actually the whole Mahabharata is designed to help one to develop their love for Krishna. Because that's all we're interested in. And that's why, you know, a pure devotee will discuss the entire Mahabharata if need be, if that's the level that people are on, if they need that beginning. They will discuss the whole thing because the pure devotee is only interested in teaching about Krishna, and if that's as much as they can hear about Krishna, then let's do that. Not that because they're only interested in Krishna, I'm not talking to anyone who's, unless someone, I'm not going to discuss anything unless they're on the platform of just hearing about Krishna specifically, then I won't speak anything. That's not what it's saying. But a pure devotee, if something is slightly remoted with Krishna, is slightly related with Krishna, their heart and soul, they're interested. That's the point. is so interested in Krishna that only has to have the slightest relationship with Krishna as appropriate, then they're interested. Like that. So, don't take that statement out of context. Yeah.
So is there, what is the actual difference between Yogamaya and Radharani? Is there a difference?
Yes, there is. And we'll get to that. We will get to that. Just hold that thought for a moment, you know. Is there a difference between Yogamaya and Radharani? In one sense, yes. When Prabhupada, you know, discusses this verse in a lecture, he says Radharani. You know, those are fully engaged in emotion, you know, they're under the protection of the divine nature.
Is that 9:13?
9:13, yeah. And he says Radharani. Yeah. So, in one sense, the answer is yes. Because Radharani is the full potency of the Lord. But, you know, Radharani is pure love of God personified. You know, it's a personification of pure love of God, the personification of the pure lover of God. Yogamaya helps to connect the living entity with Radharani. Radharani is not different from the pastimes of love of God. She's not different from love of God. And she's not different from the supreme devotee of, you know, who personifies the highest level of love of God, Radharani. So, Yogamaya is linking the living entity with Radharani. But, therefore, you would consider that Yogamaya is more just like the gopis are expansions of Radharani, than Yogamaya, who is Purnamasi, one of the gopis, is also more an expansion of Radharani. Some of the gopis, you know, they have different. You know, some the gopis favour Krishna. Some of the gopis favour Radharani. Some of them create meetings between them, between Krishna and Radharani. So the gopis are assisting Krishna and Radharani's pastimes. So the expansions of Radharani. Yogamaya is assisting the living entities to take part in those pastimes, to link with Krishna and Radha in those pastimes. Yoga Maya is linking. So in other words, if you said, you know, is Radharani and Lalita the same? Yes? You know, all the gopis are expansions of Radharani. In another sense, they actually perform, Lalita performs different tasks in Radharani. So is Yogamaya a gopi and in the form of Purnamasi and Radharani the same? Yes, in one sense, being expansions of that Ladini Shakti. In another sense, they do completely different things. Is Yogamaya and Mahamaya the same? Yes, it's actually just the one potency. But they do different things as well. So yes, they're one. So it's not wrong to say that the divine energy is Radharani. In verse 13, which Prabhupada sometimes says, that's a higher understanding. The beginning understanding is what we're here, that what is this energy? Our beginning understanding, who is the energy that appeared with Krishna? First understanding, Mahamaya. That's the first thing. We and others we may be relating Krishna's pastimes need to know. Oh, that is Mahamaya. That is Durga. As I mentioned at the beginning, when Prabhupada was asked, who is Subhadra? Oh, that's Durga. And we're going to look at Durga, because Durga is also another name of the spiritual energy as well as being the name of the material energy. From that, we have to understand that Durga, is an expansion of Yogamaya, and that Yogamaya, that principal potency that descended with Krishna, she facilitates the spiritual aspects with the devotees who are Krishna conscious and Krishna. She facilitates that. And then when there are materialistic persons in sort of externally involved in Krishna's pastimes, then as Mahamaya, Durga Devi, then she facilitates that. So they both facilitate different aspects. But above that is Prema. Prema Bhakti, who is not different from Radharani in another sense. And we'll look at that. I've got a nice little quote for you, which we'll get to. So we're almost there, actually. We're almost there. For our understanding, Bhagavad Gita 9.13, they're talking about Yogamaya. And in a higher sense, Radharani. But a little differentiation, and we're going to look at that. In what sense would we say that we're under Yogamaya, and what sense would we say we're under Radharani? We'll look at that. what sense do we say we're under Mahamaya? What sense do we understand we're under Yogamaya? So if we're acting like Kamsa, we're probably under Mahamaya. If we're acting like Devaki, trying to serve Krishna purely, full surrender, then we can be under Yogamaya. If we're on the platform of Prema Bhakti, then we're under Radharani. That's a simple answer. So, discussed in this purport by Prabhupada, Bhagavad Gita 10.1.25, how his Vishnu Maya potency acted in different ways, such as Yoga Maya, Yashoda and Devaki, and other intimate relations of the Lord, and then she acted in a different way, Mahamaya, with Kamsa and Selva. Now, just look at Vishwanath Chakravarti Kaur's comments, some of them in this. He says, in order to charm the eternal devotees and bewilder the enemies like Kamsa, Krishna gave orders to Yogamaya and Mahamaya. And he says that Vishnumaya refers to both energies of the Lord. But he says, but elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, it is stated that Krishna gave orders to Yogamaya. Right? So as we get into the, I think, the next chapter, whatever happened, whether Yogamaya acted as Yogamaya or Mahamaya, in the beginning, Krishna summoned Yogamaya and asked her, you do this. She was the one who received the orders. And she was the one who then acted in different ways as Yogamaya and Mahamaya. That's the point of Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core. And that's the point that, you know, stuck out to me when I'm reading the Bhagavatam. You know, he didn't call Durga Devi, he called Yogamaya, you do this. And she acted in both capacities. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core, quotes the Narada Pancharatra, saying that Mahamaya is an expansion of Yogamaya, and he says, quoting the Pancharatra, Yogamaya is the Swarup Shakti of Lord Vishnu. She is completely surrendered and unswerving in devotion to the Lord. So, you know, being the Swarup Shakti, she's not different from Lord Vishnu, his own internal spiritual potency. And she is completely surrendered and unswerving in devotion to the Lord. Her nature is prema, and she rules over Gokul like a queen. One immediately attains the Lord by her mercy. Her Avanika Shakti is Mahamaya, the controller of the material realm. By her influence, all jivas identify with their bodies and become bewildered. Mahamaya is also called Durga, Eka, or Ekanamsa. So, very much what Srila Prabhupada has mentioned in his purport. Yeah, he says, Karyate, and executing activities, there are two types of activities, those of Yogamaya and those of Maya. Yogamaya came to the prison when Krishna was born, transferred the seventh child from Devaki's womb, and put Yasoda into deep sleep to exchange the two children. These are activities of Yogamaya, not Mahamaya. Mahamaya does not have the power to transfer her master Balaram to another womb. Yasoda's sleep is not the work of Mahamaya because the scriptures say that beyond the fourth state of consciousness is the fifth state of prema. The dreaming of Krishna's eternal associates occurs in that state of prema. Their sleep and dreaming are not caused by the modes of nature. Mahamaya cannot exert any influence over the eternal associates of the Lord. The form of Devaki's daughter that Kamsa tried to kill was Mahamaya, not Yogamaya. Yogamaya does not involve herself with such sinful people. Mahamaya slipped from Kamsa's hands, rose up in the sky, and then settled in many places with different names after saying, I will be born from the womb of Yasoda in Nanda's house, at the end of the 28th yuga cycle. In the Vaivishvada Manu. As a resident of Vindhya Mountain, I will kill your evil companions. He goes on to explain that the bewilderment of the husbands and mothers-in-law of the married gopis joining the Rasa Leela was an action of Yoga Maya, not Mahamaya, because the husbands were not atheistic or unfavourable towards the Lord. If they were under the influence of Mahamaya, then we would certainly observe in them hostility toward the Lord. Now, then, on the other hand, demons like Duryodhana and Salva never gave respect to the Lord, even though they saw Krishna's Vishvarupa and Garuda Karya. They thought Krishna was one of the wicked Yadavas. This is the action of Mahamaya, not Yogamaya, because their actions show hostility to the Lord. So Duryodhana and, Salya, they even saw the Virat Rupa, the universal form, and they saw the Garuda Karya of the Lord. Now that would be enough to convince me. And still, because they were inimical, then they just thought, as it says here, they just thought it was wicked. They were hostile to Krishna. The bewilderment of demons is the action of Mahamaya, and the bewilderment of the devotees is the action of Yogamaya. When Yasoda saw the universal form, Vishvarupa, in Krishna's mouth, and when Nanda Maharaj saw Krishna in Varuna Loka, they were completely unaffected by it because of their intense Vatsalya Bhava, parental affection. Even though they saw such majestic aspects of the Lord, this is neither the action of Yogamaya nor Mahamaya, it is the nature of Prema itself. And there you see the difference between Radharani and Yogamaya. Because that Radharani is non-different from Prema Bhakti. She is a personification of Prema Bhakti. And she is non-different from the pastimes of Prema Bhakti in the conjugal mood. So, it says here that prema covers one's knowledge of the Lord's power and majesty and binds up Krishna in the hearts of his premi bhaktas more and more with the ropes of spiritual possessiveness. As affection for Krishna increases, prema completely submerges the devotees in the great ocean of relishing Krishna's sweetness. To convey this unique quality of prema, the Tantra says, Krishna spread his Vaishnavi Maya in the form of parental affection. Extreme affection for a son is the unique quality of this Vatsalya prema. Right, so, Yogamaya can bewilder the devotees who are, but their bewilderment is not the actions of the material energy. Their bewilderment is the actions of the spiritual energy. And there, as it describes, that there, so for instance, when we're dreaming, let's say Mother Yashoda, she wakes up and she's given birth to Krishna, but she's bewildered and couldn't remember because she's in a half, I've just woken up, you was going to have the baby, there's the baby, seems like I've had a little girl. So that's Yogamaya. it's a bewildered state, but as he puts it, it's you know, the material energy can't affect them. Now, we see that Duryodhana, he's bewildered. Even he sees Krishna's, you know, universal form. He's bewildered. Oh, he's, you know, he's just one of these wicked Yadavas. That's material energy. So there are two different types of bewilderment. Then, above that, where Yasoda sees a universal form, but because her vatsalya love, her parental love, that spiritual love for Krishna is so intense that Krishna's just showed her, you know, that he's God, but she just cannot see anything but her lovely little boy because of her love, that these other things just, it's like an anomaly that just, they don't really think about, you know, they just pass it off really quick, you know, because it means nothing to them. It's, you know, what is she saying? Maybe, we'll get to that anyway, you know, her statements, but we'll look at that a little further later on. I don't want to get too deep into it now. We'll cover all of these things, actually, in great depth. But it's very nice to hear these because, as you can see, there are many pastimes we're going to look at and they discuss this point. So we've got Mahamaya, Yogamaya, and then the actions of Prema. And we saw, you know, we see that in verse 13 of the Bhagavad Gita, that little glimpse there. Pure devotees are not even attracted by Krishna's other features, such as his four-armed Mahavishnu, what to speak of the universal form. They're not attracted to other features of Krishna, nor are they concerned with any form of a demigod or human being. They meditate only on Krishna and Krishna consciousness. So we develop that ability as Mahatmas and then gradually try to become Prema Bhaktas. So now, in the additional notes, so within this chapter, Bhagavatam, there are, Prabhupada mentions these same things. So let's look at the similar things that Prabhupada's saying on the exact same point from the additional notes. He says the word kayate, which a lot of the purport of Vishwanath Chakravarti, the call was about this word, you know, the activities that Vishnu Maya was asked to do. It refers to one who is who attracted the pregnancy of Devaki and bewildered Mother Yasoda. So Yogamaya attracted the child within the womb of Devaki and also bewildered Mother Yashoda. These pastimes are very confidential. The Supreme Personality of Godhead ordered Yogamaya to bewilder his associates in his pastimes and bewilder the demons like Kamsa. To give service to the Lord, Yogamaya appeared along with Mahamaya. Mahamaya refers to Yaya Samohitam Jagat, one who bewilders the entire material world. From this statement, it is understood that Yoga Maya, in her partial expansion, becomes Mahamaya and bewilders the conditioned souls. In other words, the entire creation has two divisions, transcendental or spiritual and material. Spiritual and material. Yoga Maya manages the spiritual world, and by her partial expansion as Mahamaya, she manages the material world. And he quotes the same as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur from the Narada Pancharatra. The Mahamaya is a partial expansion of Yoga Maya. Again, quoting the Narada Pancharatra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has one potency, which is sometimes described as Durga. So we can also call Yoga Maya Durga. And from what I remember, that's how it's described in the Brahma Samhita. The Brahma Samhita says, Chayeva Yasya Bhuvanani Vibhata Durga. Durga is not different from Yoga Maya. I knew about that somewhere. When one understands Durga properly, he is immediately liberated. For Durga is originally the spiritual potency, Hladini Shakti, by whose mercy one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead very easily. Radha Krishna Pranaya Vikriti Hladini Shakti Asmat. The Mahamaya Shakti, however, is a covering of Yoga Maya, and she is therefore called the covering potency. By this covering potency, the entire world is bewildered. And there, as you see, that Srila Prabhupada, talking about Yoga Maya, who is also known as Durga, even when she's referred in the spiritual way, and that Yoga Maya is originally the Hladini Shakti, and as we know, the Hladini Shakti is Radharani, and therefore Prabhupada quotes that verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita about the Hladini Shakti. So the original energy is the Hladini Shakti. Mahamaya, yeah, it's the same person.
Same.
Yeah, just like... Mahamaya is Durga. So...
I thought you said those two were different, right? When we're under Mahamaya, we're in a bad influence.
Yeah.
When it's Yoga Maya, it's good influence.
Yeah. So if we say Durga, we can call Yoga Maya, the spiritual influence, Durga, and we can call Mahamaya, the material influence, Durga.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So it's the same coin.
Yeah, because, it's like, what do they call a baby swan?
Signet.
A signet. So we can call a swan.
Signet.
We can call a swan, or we can call it a signet. We can also call a signet a swan. Can't we? We can say.
Become a swan.
No, well, already is a swan.
Yeah, baby swan, yeah.
Well, it's not a dog. And it's not a cat, is it?
Yeah.
It's a swan.
Yeah.
But to distinguish that it's in a not as complete form, then we say signet.
Yeah.
So we call Krishna's energy, Durga.
Okay.
And if we want to distinguish between the full spiritual potency and the partial expansion, shadow potency, we'll call it, say, Yoga Maya, Mahamaya.
Okay.
And therefore, Prabhupada says, when one understands Durga properly, he's immediately liberated, for Durga is originally the spiritual potency. In other words, if we speak of Durga and we speak of her in a material goddess, that means we don't understand Durga properly. If we look at a signet, and we think that's all it will ever be, we don't understand that signet properly, because it will grow to a beautiful swamp. And Yogamaya is an expansion from the Ladini Shakti, or the Lord's spiritual pleasure potency. Radharani is a full manifestation of the Lord's spiritual pleasure potency, and she expands in many different, as many different gopis, such as Yogamaya, such as Lalita, such as Brinda, and they are also, they are expansions of the Ladini Shakti, or expansions of Radharani, who is the full Ladini Shakti, pleasure potency. Now, and Prabhupada mentions, transferring the pregnancy of Devaki and keeping Mother Yashoda in deep sleep were both done by Yogamaya. Mahamaya cannot act upon such devotees, for they are always liberated. So Prabhupada's purports are just so much. One thing I notice with Prabhupada's commentaries and discussions on, you know, many aspects of the Bhagavatam and many aspects of the, especially the 10th canto, is the comments by Vishvanath Chakravarti, the core, are very prominent in Prabhupada's purports, very prominent. So, you know, it's a very important, you know, to, we can refer to those, especially. And sometimes Prabhupada literally just writes out, you know, he puts it in his own word, but it's pretty much the full purport by Vishvanath Chakravarti, the core. So, but although it is not possible for Mahamaya to control liberated souls or the Supreme Person of Godhead, she did bewilder Kamsa. The action of Yogamaya in presenting herself before Kamsa was the action of Mahamaya, not Yogamaya. Yogamaya cannot even see or touch such polluted persons as Kamsa. So the way he puts it there is a very definite distinction. She just withdraws. Very important, because you know, when we're chanting Hare Krishna and we say the Lord's holy name has unlimited potencies, but he can withdraw that. He can chant the holy name and he can withdraw if there are offences. Especially Vaishnava Apparat, he can. People think, yes, I'm chanting. How's that? Krishna's withdrawn his potency. You'll never understand him. And you'll never have love of God. So, and Prabhupada, you know, I do notice that in the way Prabhupada quotes the Markandeya Purana, he says, during the 28th Yuga, in the period of Avivashvata Manu, I shall take birth as the daughter of Yashoda and be known as Vindhya Chalavasini. Now, when I read the commentary by, you know, Banu Swami of Vishwanath Chakravarti, the court, it was a little confusing. He says it in this way: I will be born from the womb of Yashoda in Nanda's house in the 28th Yuga cycle at the end of Vaivasvata Manvantara. So that's a little confusing, isn't it? Because the end of Vaivasvata Manvantara is another, you know, 6 manus away. So, you know, it may be just his, you know, whether he meant to say, you know, I will be born in the 28th Yuga cycle at the end, in the Vaivasvata Manvantara. It may be just a little editing thing, you know what I mean? If he says, born in the 28th Yuga cycle at the end, in the Vaibhishvata Manvata. But the way he's put it, it sounds like he's actually put it that at the end of the Vaibhishvata Manvata. Right? So anyway, the way Prabhupada put it, so I always like to compare everything with Prabhupada's books, you know, because that's our ultimate authority.
Is that
according
to the Mark and
the Quran? Yes.
How do you put it?
Well, basically, during the 28th Yuga, in the period of the Vaibhishvata Manu, I will take birth as the daughter of Yashoda and be known as Vindhyachala Vasini. Or, you know, Vindhyachala. And we'll see that Durga, Mahamaya, is known by various different names. Yeah. Fifth one in this first chapter?
Fifth verse.
25th verse. In here?
25th.
Yeah. Vindhyachala Vasini. No, because, you know, that quotation is from the Markandeya Purana. And quoted in Vishwanath Chakravarti, the cause commentary, and Prabhupada is quoting the same thing.
From the Markandeya?
Yeah, it's from the Markandeya Purana. But
in this
seventh manu,
seventh
manu Vaibhishvata. Yeah, but I have noticed, you know, just a few little editorial things there in some of the productions of the commentaries by acharyas, and I'm pointing that out not as a way of criticism, but just sort of to be very careful. There may be a little editorial thing sometimes, and they have to be aware that they're there. So a little cross-referencing is good between sometimes, you know, we're trying to understand Prabhupada's books, but always have to read what the acharyas are saying, you know, with reference to Prabhupada's books.
And the Vishwacharya Thakur commentary that we have, the digital version, it is quite unedited. There are some issues already.
Yeah, which one? The
Vishwacharya Thakur commentary?
On the 10th canto?
What we have,
yep.
On our digital copy, what we have, it's not fully edited.
Right, the digital copy.
There are issues. And what you read is slightly different from what we are reading.
Right.
So this is what we have is a bit raw and there are issues.
Right.
Straight away we can see.
What about the book? Is the digital copy slightly different from the book?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So that's also an issue.
Yeah. That's why I'm pointing out, not as a way of being critical, but it's a little dangerous sometimes devotees are actually reading, that they feel that they're getting more out of the commentaries than Prabhupada's books. That's a mistake. Mm-hmm. Yet, we don't want to undervalue. They're extremely helpful and relevant. But you know,
So that was to know that Yogamaya was also called
Vindhyachala Vasini. And that
who's her father?
Well, she appeared as the daughter of Nanda and Yashoda.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, and that was her name in that form.
Yes, Vindhyachala Vasini.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, she'll be known as Vindhyachala Vasini, not necessarily because that's the name that Nanda and Yashoda gave her, but. Because people understood that she's Durga, you know, she's worshipped by various names as Durga, which we'll come across later. Then just this additional note of Prabhupada, a little bit more, that, you know, distinguishing between the two mayas. Krishna's rasa lila with the gopis and the gopis' bewilderment in respect to their husbands, fathers-in-law and other such relatives were arrangements of yogamaya in which mahamaya had no influence. On the other hand, there were asuras headed by Salva and chatras like Duryodhana who were bereft of devotional service in spite of seeing Krishna's carrier guru in the universal form and who could not understand Krishna to be the personality of Godhead. This is also bewilderment, but this bewilderment is due to Mahamaya. Therefore, it is to be concluded that the Maya which drags a person from the Supreme Personality of Godhead is called Jadamaya, right, or Mahamaya, and the Maya which acts on the transcendental platform is called Yogamaya. When Nanda Maharaj was taken away by Varuna, he saw Krishna's opulence, but nonetheless, he thought of Krishna as his son. Such feelings of parental love in the spiritual world are acts of Yogamaya, not Jadamaya or Mahamaya. This is the opinion of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Now, this is very interesting, right? Because Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has said this is not Mahamaya. Not yogis, yogamaya is prema. And Prabhupada, you know, so Prabhupada's comments are very interesting because if we've got a misunderstanding of what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying, he's correcting us. That, therefore, right, so as we know, Prabhupada has already pointed out to us that it's not, you know, this yogamaya is Hadini Shakti, Prema Bhakti. Yeah.
Who is Prabhupada's commentary?
This is Prabhupada's. From the end of this first chapter. The end of this.
It's
Prabhupada's commentary. And this is, yeah. And so Prabhupada has pointed out that the yogamaya we know to be Hadini Shakti. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying that, you know, the bewilderment, for instance, of Nanda when he saw the opulence of Krishna, or Yasoda when they saw the opulence of you know, Krishna, that they're not taking is very significant. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying that is neither Mahamaya or Yogamaya, it's Prema. And Prabhupada is saying the same thing, except he's saying that it is Yogamaya. Right. So, he's explained to us that Yogamaya is this Hadini Shakti, which is personified as Radharani, the embodiment of Prema Bhakti. So, in other words, it's not wrong for us to say that that is Yogamaya. But what we've understood from these additional notes, that if we say something is meant for those who don't have devotion and bewildering them, that is Mahamaya, and that Mahamaya is Yogamaya. But Yogamaya, when she acts as Mahamaya, does not show us spiritual potencies at all. And Mahamaya is Yogamaya. Only thing is, when she deals with the non-devotees, she doesn't show her aspect of Yogamaya. But it is Yogamaya.
Because but previously he was saying that she doesn't want to, there was that verse about not being wanted to be touched or polluted.
That's right. So that's right. But it is Yoga Maya, because who is Mahamaya? That's expansion. That's a, you know, Yoga Maya acting in a different way.
But then you said that Vishnu...
No, I'm going to just let me finish it. So when Yoga Maya is acting on a higher level as Vardini Shakti or, you know, Prema Bhakti, still you can say as Yoga Maya, but there's a distinction that she's actually acting as Prema Bhakti. So it's like that. So it's not wrong to say who bewildered Kamsa? Yoga Maya. But she acted as Mahamaya. Who bewildered Nanda and Yashoda? Prema Bhakti. But it's not wrong to say Yoga Maya. And that, you know, so Prabhupada is bringing us back to you know, because it is Yoga Maya that Krishna called, you know, for these various purposes. But when Yoga Maya, who Krishna called, acts on an even, you know, higher level of Prema Bhakti, we can say it's, you know, called Yoga Maya by a different name, but basically it's Yoga Maya. That's who Krishna brought with him. Right. Otherwise, someone would say. Yeah, she's an expansion. Yeah. Mahamaya is an expansion of Yogamaya, and Yogamaya is an expansion of Vardini Shakti, who is the embodiment of Prema Bhakti. The main purport of this is, which energy came with Krishna? What would be your answer? Did Vardini Shakti come? Did Mahamaya Durga come? Who came? Who did Krishna order to come and perform certain activities? Yoga Maya. That's what Prabhupada's pointing out, right? Come back to that point. Otherwise, you know, we may go off somewhere from the main point. That's why Prabhupada, you know, he does that sometimes. He just makes a little... he's not correcting Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core. He's correcting our concept of what we may read of the Acharyas. Therefore, he says, Prabhupada says, this is the opinion of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core. So sometimes he says that. Such feelings of parental love in the spiritual world are acts of Yoga Maya, not Jatamaya, Mahamaya. This is the opinion of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core. So he's making it very clear. I've read the commentary. So don't think there's something else there. This is his opinion. Right? So it's very, you know. So he's not correcting. He's not saying Vishwanath, you know, he's correcting our mentality of how what we may go off on a little tangent. And that's why it's very, devotees have to be very careful. And the reason I'm going into a lot of detail here in, you know, because a lot of devotees do. They think, I didn't find much in Prabhupada's books. I'll go to the Acharya's books and there'll be so much there for me. And, you know, it's actually a little dangerous for the untrained, because somehow that there's something more than what Prabhupada has given. That's a danger. So if, you know, if there's a contradiction, then we have to understand that, you know, Prabhupada is giving the correct. I'm seeing something different, so I have to adjust. I have to try and understand why Prabhupada is saying that. That's how we do it. If we do it the other way, Prabhupada seems to say something different, but the acharyas are saying this. I think I'll take that one. Then that means we got a wrong understanding, and from that point, it's very easy to, maybe Prabhupada, maybe Krishna asked Radharani to come and or the Ladini Shakti, or we all sorts of things can go in there and you can go off on a tangent. So. So it's good to clarify these things from the very beginning of our studies.
Are the acharyas the teachers before?
The gurus, yeah.
Wouldn't they have accurate information?
Their information is completely accurate, right down to the half syllables. But
I just want to understand.
We're not qualified to actually always understand what they're saying, even though they've written it down. That's the problem. And Prabhupada knows exactly our disqualifications, and so he'll say what we should understand from it. And then what happens when we see Prabhupada saying that, we think, oh, I understood something different. I was reading the Acharya's books and I understand something different. So Prabhupada tells us this is what you should understand from it, knowing our disqualifications to understand it correctly.
Okay.
That's the value of Prabhupada's books.
There is no contradiction.
No.
Our interpretation could be wrong.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. But Prabhupada, he strictly follows the commentaries of the Acharyas. Strictly.
Okay.
Never deviates. Yeah.
Because then this verse 25 of 10th canto, 10:25, is all about inner purpose, so about
the Prabhupada. Prabhupada said from the very, he pointed out from the very beginning of his discussion on this, these are very confidential matters. Confidential means the books are there. You can go and buy them in the markets, you can go and buy them in the bookshop.
Yeah.
Confidential means that they're understood by revelation.
Yeah.
Yeah. By those whose hearts are filled with different levels of love of God. Now, just before we move on to Kamsa, just a little extra on this. This aspect of bewildering and also how... yoga maya how yoga maya acts, and also how one's level of prima bhakti allows one to fix their attention on Krishna only. So that, one of the things we're seeing there with Prema Bhakti is that with Nanda and Yashoda, even though they were shown the opulence of Krishna, which would be, which is there, but their love for Krishna as a person was so intense that they had no interest at all in his opulences, that he may be a demigod or god or whatever. They had no interest. He's just my boy, I love him. Is he hungry? Does he want to play? Whatever, that's it. They wouldn't budge from that position. Therefore, generally they didn't think of him as God. They didn't think of him as God because of their prema bhakti, their love. Then others may not think of him as God. Well, they think of him as God, as non-different from the super soul. But whereas the residents of Vrindavan had no interest in his opulences, the residences of Dwarka, their attention was focused on that to a significant, you know, to a significant degree. And therefore, because their attention was focused on the opulences, that here is that person who is a super soul within the hearts of all living entities, Vishnu, he has appeared amongst us, taken, you know, for his pastimes. But because of that, they had very little attraction or attention for the human-like activities of Krishna as he showed in Braja. They didn't mean as much to them. And so they literally, the most wonderful opportunity to literally just enjoy with God in such an intimate, loving way, they missed that opportunity that it was there, because like that. So, you know, this is mentioned. So that's these are, therefore, that is one's perception of Krishna because of development of love of God on a lower, or, you know, comparatively lower level. And that is described in the third canto, in the second chapter. It says there, the Yadus were all experienced devotees, learned and expert in psychic study. So they're all very advanced devotees. Over and above this, they were always with the Lord in all kinds of relaxations, and still they were only able to know him as the one supreme who dwells everywhere. That's text 9. So as Prabhupada mentions in the purport, he says, in the Vedas it is said that the Supreme Lord or the Paramatma cannot be understood simply by the strength of one's erudition or power of mental speculation. He can only be known by one who has the mercy of the Lord. The Yadavas were all exceptionally learned and experienced. But in spite of their knowing the Lord as the one who lives in everyone's heart, they could not understand that he is the original personality of Godhead. This lack of knowledge was not due to their insufficient erudition, it was their misfortune. In Vrindavan, however, the Lord was not even known as the Paramatma because the residents of Vrindavan were pure, unconventional devotees of the Lord and could not think of him only as it, and could think of him only as their object of love. They did not know that he was the personality of Godhead. So you've got personalities like Duryodhan. They don't know he's the personality of Godhead because of Mahamaya, even though he's showing his universal form in the Garuda carrier. And then you've got the residents of Vrindavan. They don't know he's the personality of Godhead because they can only see him, this is the person I love. And they just can't see beyond that because the love doesn't allow them to.
When you said text 9 from...
This is from the third canto, chapter 2. So, so you've got the Mahamaya, you've got the advanced Prema Bhakta, both of them not seeing the personality of Godhead. And then here in the middle, you've got the Yadavas, who are devotees, but the devotion is not on the high level of Prema Bhakti as a Brajabasi, so they're seeing this is God.
Mm-hmm.
this is God, but they can't appreciate the Krishna Lila going on in Vrindavan.
Isn't that circumstantial though?
That's their misfortune.
Because if you see a child, it's easy to fall in love with the child, but when you're seeing an adult with powers, again, it's very natural to be in awe of that person.
Yeah.
The only thing I don't understand is Duryodhana not still picking up on the fact after seeing the group, it's like, how stupid can you be?
Yeah, well, that's as stupid as Duryodhana.
The other two, it makes sense. The other two, it makes sense. Like with the Vrajavasis and Kartha, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because they're reacting to what they're seeing. They're reacting to circumstances. Mm-hmm. You're not going to go back as an adult to think, oh, what would the Lord be like if he was a child? Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah, well, I mean, many people told Duryodhana he's the Supreme Person of Godhead, didn't he? He was even told that by different personalities. They actually told him.
He even saw the
Virat. He saw the Guru, yeah.
Krishna.
Yeah.
He still didn't see anything.
Mm. It was Dhritarashtra said, I know he's the Supreme Person of Godhead, but I can't follow his instructions.
Yeah.
So, it takes a bit of meditation. But anyway... Now, Prabhupada explains in his purport here, right, that the Yadus or the residents of Dwarka could not know Lord Krishna as Vasudeva, could know Lord Krishna as Vasudeva or the super soul living everywhere. So that's the Krishna outside of Vrindavan, Vasudeva, but not as the Supreme Lord. As scholars of the Vedas, they verify the Vedic hymns. The Yadus therefore accepted Lord Krishna as the super soul incarnated in their family and not more than that. Mm. So actually Krishna is more than that. You know, Krishna is more than the super soul within the heart. That actually that's a, you know, the super soul is where the personality of Godhead expands to look after the material world. Whereas God in his own right in the spiritual world performing all his wonderful activity, that's God in his own right. That's more than that. That's more than Vishnu, more than the super soul's business. His pastimes with his devotees. So it takes a lot of meditation, but anyway, I just wanted to point that out, these different levels. Any comments, questions? So it says in the next verse, it says, under no circumstances can the words of persons bewildered by the illusory energy of the Lord deviate the intelligence of those who are completely surrendered souls. That's the next verse. And it said in the purport, the Yadavas were only partially cognizant of the Lord, but they are also glorious because they had the opportunity to associate with the Lord who acted as the head of their family. And they also rendered the Lord intimate service. The Yadavas and other devotees of the Lord are different from those who wrongly calculated him to be an ordinary human personality. Such persons are certainly bewildered by the illusory energy. So they're not bewildered by Mahamaya. So these are the, for instance, the statements of persons who.
So did you just say the Yadavas are not?
Not bewildered by Mahamaya, no, because they're devotees. But actually, but still, although they're devotees, their devotion is not on the level where they can only understand Krishna partially.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point. With a greater level of prema bhakti. Following in the footsteps of the Vrajavasis, they can realize that all attractive form of the Lord, you know, his feature as a super soul, you know, compared to the all attractive form of Krishna and those activities and loving activities, the aspect of Vishnu is not attractive at all. So they've, you know, for the pure devotees, something that they don't even care about too much, they're considered that the all in all, there's nothing beyond that. But the all-attractive form of Krishna and his pastimes and those wonderful pastimes of love, they are not privy to that. They have no taste of it, and they're not particularly attracted to it. And they don't understand it. You know, they may even see it as a separate or inferior thing. What their relationship with the super soul is the all and all. That's it. But it's not. That's not a material thing that causes them that. So I'm just pointing out that factor, that that's not Mahamaya. This is Mahamaya, which says in that purport. People with a mentality of atheism, faithless, they're always very eager to establish that Lord Krishna was an ordinary man who was killed by a hunter due to his many impious acts in plotting to kill the sons of Dhritarashtra and Jarasandha, the demoniac kings on the earth. So, you know, Duryodhana apparently is also thinking of Krishna in this way. You know, oh, he's always plotting to get this kingdom back, and, you know, he's helping those Pandavas. You know, he's like wicked. And and they say that he was killed by a hunter. People say he was killed by a hunter because he was so impious, that Krishna was so wicked that he was killed by a hunter. And then, according to the atheistic point of view, Lord Krishna's family, the Yadu dynasty, was vanquished due to being cursed by the Brahmanas for the sins committed by Krishna in killing the sons of Dhritarashtra, etc. and then verse 11, Lord Sri Krishna, who manifested his eternal form before the vision of all on the earth, performed his disappearance by removing his form from the sight of those who were unable to see him as he is due to not executing required penance. So the Lord, verse 12, the Lord appeared in the mortal world by his internal potency, Yoga Maya. He came in his eternal form, which is just suitable for his pastimes. So again, in this verse 13, third canto, second chapter, text number 12. Again, this Yoga Maya, that making arrangements for the Lord's appearance, like that. By his internal potency, Yoga Maya. He came in his eternal form, which is just suitable for his pastimes. These pastimes were wonderful for everyone, even for those proud of their opulence, including the Lord himself in his form as the Lord of Vaikuntha, Narayan. Thus, Sri Krishna's transcendental body is the ornament of all ornaments. All the demigods, now here's another type of bewilderment, all the demigods, this is in the purport, thought that Lord Krishna, like themselves, was also created by Lord Brahma. But in fact, Brahma was created by Lord Krishna. It was not within the power of Brahma to create the transcendental beauty of the Supreme Lord. No one is a creator of Krishna. Rather, he is a creator of everyone. Right? So there, we're seeing that, in fact, some of those demigods were under Mahamaya, you know, to think him an ordinary person. There's another example there. All right, so I think we've covered that enough. Very important, because we're going to be dealing with these spiritual potencies. You know, there's a variety of others that come in. Krishna's mercy potency, Krishna's Leela Shakti. You know, we'll get to that. But, okay. What's that?
That's what it's for, right? Understanding that.
Yeah, how the Lord, you know, so we're basically, all of this discussion come from verse 25 of, you know, the first chapter of the 10th canto, that the Lord, the potency of the Lord, known as Vishnu Maya, who is as good as the Supreme Person of Godhead, will also appear with the Lord Krishna. This potency, acting in different capacities, captivates all the worlds, both material and spiritual. At the request of her master, she will appear with the different potencies in order to execute the work of the Lord. Now, Prabhupada didn't explain that, We'd have no idea what that meant.
If you didn't.
Yeah. And for people who have no idea what it means, in Prabhupada's Krishna book, he says this. They were also informed that the external potency of Vishnu, Maya, with whom all the conditioned souls are enamoured, would also appear by the order of the Supreme Lord just to execute his purpose. That's generally what we should tell people. What there is in the Krishna book. Who is Maya? She's Durga, Krishna's sister. Yeah. All the rest is more confidential. Yeah? So, Prabhupada was asked by one of his disciples, who is Subhadra? And he answered that she's Durga. That was his answer. And as we see, when Prabhupada says Durga, we know that there's a little bit more to that there. Durga means Yogamaya and Mahamaya. But for the simple explanation, as I said, one may understand that she's the material energy of the Lord. And so that was his answer. But elsewhere, it is mentioned by the Acharyas that Subhadra is Yogamaya. So when Yogamaya is in there within Vrindavan to manifest, arrange for the pastimes of Krishna, she is Purnamasi. And when Yogamaya is in Dwarka to arrange the spiritual pastimes of Krishna, she is Subhadra. That's a simple answer. When Yogamaya is in Vrindavan to organize the pastimes of Krishna, she is Purnamasi. And when she's organizing the pastimes in Dwarka, she's Subhadra. So expansion again, Yogamaya expanding for different activities.
Mm. There's one comment from the
22nd.
About Subhadra.
Yeah.
Internal potency is understood to be Krishna's sister, also known as Ekanamsha or Subhadra.
Yeah.
This is the Durga who was worshipped by the gopis in Vrindavan.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, several acharyas have pointed out that ordinary people are sometimes bewildered and think that the names Mahamaya and Durga refer exclusively to the external potency of the Lord.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the quote?
Where
was the reference?
10th canto, 22nd chapter, verse number 4. That's in Prabhupada's purport. That's right. So sometimes, even for his disciples, Prabhupada gives a simple answer. If that's appropriate, it's Durga.
But it's actually...
but that Durga is actually, either Purnamasi, Subhadra, therefore it's like an expansion of... Yogamaya, who in her full capacity is Purnamasi, and in an even fuller capacity is Ladini Shakti. And as you can see, to ask a simple question of who is Subhadra, to discuss Mahamaya, Yogamaya, and the differentiation and Ladini Shakti, it's an hour discussion, and for someone who's just come into concept with, you know, are we a spirit soul and not this body, you know, you just wouldn't go into it. Well, that's right. I have been known to do that, as I did today. Lord Chaitanya does that. He did that with Sanatana Goswami, right? Huh? He was speaking with Sanatana Goswami. He said, oh, I've said too much. He talked about so many things. Okay. Yeah, I remember one time I was doing a home program. A lot of people were new to me. They were sort of coming along to someone's program. And they asked me to each week talk about, was it negative instruction, I think it was. And one time, you know, we got up to the point and I remember saying, said, there's no reason why everyone in this room can't develop bhava, you know, bhakti in this life. And I was looking around and, you know, afterwards I thought, oh, you know, none of them are going to care about that. And actually all of those people became devotees, you know, and become initiated and everything like that. And I thought, oh, there you go. You know, they were interested. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, because I watched them, because I always thought about that, I thought I should never have said that. You know, it was too much. But they're actually attracted. All right, so let's in the course of this time just look at some of the activities of Kamsa. And you know, what we're not particularly interested in Kamsa, but really what we're interested in is how Vasudev and Devaki, who are protected by Yogamaya, manage to deal with this demon with the protection. That's what we're... That's what we're looking at, and how the Yogamaya dealt with Kamsa, but in a Mahamaya vision. So, Sukadeva Goswami continued, after thus advising the demigods and pacifying Mother Earth, the very powerful Lord Brahma, who is the master of all other Prajapatis and is therefore known as Prajapati Pati, returned to his own abode, Brahmaloka. Formerly, Shirasena, the chief of the Yadu dynasty, had gone to live in the city of Mathura. There he enjoyed the places known as Mathura and Surasena. So there's also a province called Shirasena. Yep. Shirasena was the son of Kartavir Arjun. And in the purport, or in additional notes, Prabhupada says this. In regard to Mathura, we find this quotation. When a self-realized soul acts in his transcendental position, his situation is called Mathura. In other words, when one acts in the process of bhakti yoga, he may live anywhere. But actually, he lives in Mathura Vrindavan. Devotion to Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, is the essence of all knowledge. And wherever such knowledge is manifested is called Mathura. So, we'll go into it a little bit later, but Kamsa represents the atheistic mentality to, you know, cover the absolute truth. Krishna represents the absolute truth, very good portrayal, because he is the absolute truth. Then Vasudev, the pure-hearted Mahatma, situated on the platform of pure goodness, Vasuddha Sattva, represented by Vasudev, the pure-hearted devotional heart of Devaki, represented by Devaki, and Mathura, the Dham, where the Lord appears, fully in his full name, form, fame, qualities, pastimes, that dharma, matura, that is wherever the, as it says here, wherever one is properly situated in and acting in the process of bhakti yoga, then that place is as good as matura. So this pastime from matura, Vasudeva, Devaki, Kamsa, the six sons killed by Kamsa, all of these will go into, you know, the symbolic representation, therefore what we can draw from it. We'll go into that. But just bear this one in mind as well. And so devotion to Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, is the essence of all knowledge, and wherever such knowledge is manifest is called Mathura. Also, when one establishes bhakti yoga, excluding all other methods, one's situation is called Mathura. The place where Hari, the Supreme Person of God, lives eternally is called Mathura. So, as we said, that the pure devotees, they're not even so interested in Mahavishnu, certainly not in demigods. The verse yesterday, I give class on, was it yesterday, the day before, mentions in that fourth canto, chapter 28, in the verse that I did, that the devotee, they only have eyes for Krishna. And that's the vow the devotees take. And without taking that vow, that bhakti, devotion to Krishna doesn't manifest. That's, it's the essential part of devotion to Krishna, or bhakti, having bhakti for Krishna, is that we only have eyes for Krishna. That's it. And without that vow, that not going anywhere else, that bhakti doesn't manifest. When that bhakti does manifest, then that means that devotees, then Krishna is manifest in his dharma as Mathura within the heart of the devotee. The Supreme Lord is eternal and his abode is also eternal. Although the Lord is always stationed in his abode, Goloka Vrindavan, he is present everywhere in fullness. This means that when the Supreme Lord descends on the surface of the world, his original abode is not vacant, for he can remain in his original abode and simultaneously descend on Mathura, Vrindavan, Ayodhya and other places. He does not need to descend, since he is already present there, he simply manifests himself. So, as Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book, that Mathura is the place where Lord Sri Krishna lives eternally, just as he also lives in Dwarka. So, when we say that Krishna appears in Mathura, it is not quite correct, because he's eternally there. So he doesn't actually descend. He becomes manifest, but he's considered eternally there. Right? He does not need to descend, since he is already present there. He simply manifests himself. So it's not like we shouldn't be thinking that before Krishna appeared there, Krishna's not there. Or that after he leaves, that Krishna's not there. And wherever a devotee is, even after the appearance of the Lord, if Krishna is fully manifest in the heart, then Mathura is there and Krishna is present there as well. The Dharma is in the heart. So in his purport, you know, to text 28, since that time, the city of Mathura has been the capital of all the kings of the Yadu dynasty. The city and district of Mathura are very intimately connected with Krishna, for Lord Krishna lives there eternally. That's text 28. And the purport, It is understood that Mathura city is the transcendental abode of Lord Krishna. It is not an ordinary material city, for it is eternally connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vrindavan is within the jurisdiction of Mathura, and it is still continues to exist. Because Mathura and Vrindavan are intimately connected with Krishna eternally, it is said that Lord Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So, bear in mind that quite often when you hear quotes about Mathura, says Krishna eternally, because Vrindavan is, as Prabhupada puts it, Vrindavan is within the jurisdiction of Mathura. So so when there are quotes about the transcendental nature of Mathura, we should understand that they generally, those same quotes are referring to Vrindavan. Because that's within the jurisdiction of Mathura. And sometimes we think, oh yes, Mathura is so wonderful. Now tell me about Vrindavan. Well, we just did.
So does Mayapur also exist eternally?
I'm getting to that. Good question. I've got something just for you. Yeah. So, now, Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core, saying, as Prabhupada is saying in his purport, all perfect Krishna is eternally present in his spiritual form in Mathura, in the material world. It is there that Krishna appears and becomes visible to the people of the world. Krishna does not descend from Vaikuntha. But when Krishna appears, his expansions from Vaikuntha and Svadvipa unite with him. After the pastimes are over, they return to their respective abodes. That they descend from Vaikuntha and later return there is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam 3.2.15. We were just reading that section. We heard in those verses from the Garga Samhita that all the different incarnations enter within the Lord. They descend, and then they return. Krishna himself is eternally situated in Mathura. And Krishna doesn't descend from Vaikuntha, but all those personalities, expansions, his expansions from Vaikuntha and Svadvipa, they enter his form. They descend, enter his form, and later return. Now, Prabhupada goes on to say in the purport, At present, the place known as Vrindavan in the district of Mathura continues its position as a transcendental place, and certainly anyone who goes there becomes transcendentally purified. Navadvip Dham, there we go, is intimately connected with Brajabhuma. Narottam Das Thakur therefore says, Sri Gaudamandala Bhumi Yeba Jane Chintamani Tadahai Brajabhumi Vasa. Brajabhumi refers to Mathura Vrindavan. And Gaudamandala Bhumi includes Navadvip. These two places are non-different. Therefore, anyone living in Navadvip Dham, knowing Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be the same personality, lives in Brajabhumi, Mathura, Vrindavan. So, yes, Krishna always resides in Navadvip because Navadvip is non-different from Vrindavan. The Lord has made it convenient for the conditioned soul to live in Mathura, Vrindavan, and Navadvip, and thus be directly connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Simply by living in these places, one can immediately come in contact with the Lord. There are many devotees who vow never to leave Vrindavan and Mathura. This is undoubtedly a good vow, but if one leaves Vrindavan, Mathura, or Navadvip Dham for the service of the Lord, he is not disconnected from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada, he left Vrindavan. But because, for the purpose of, serving the Lord, the Lord, there's no disconnection. As long as, one is for the purpose of serving. Therefore, as we've already heard, that because the Lord is situated within the heart of one who's properly executing bhakti yoga perfectly, that situation of that devotee is called Mathura or Vrindavan. It is non-different, so that when they leave Vrindavan, because they're actually situated in Mathura, that is the platform of Mathura. Whereas a person may go to Mathura Vrindavan and not be situated properly in bhakti, then what is their position? What is their connection with Krishna?
Monkey in their next life.
Could be. Yeah. So, and in fact, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, the course, said of devotees who are, not in proper consciousness and living in the holy dharma, he says, they think they're, in Vrindavan and Radha Kund. He says they're in Naraka Kund. Naraka is the hellish planets. He says they're not in Radha Kund, they're in Naraka Kund. That's because that's where their consciousness is. So properly speaking, even if you're in the Dharma, if the consciousness is not there, that is not the platform of Mathura Vrindavan. That is not the actual platform. That is more the Dharms have a covering, Prodamaya, Srila Bhaktivinoda calls it Prodamaya. And it's like a external covering. And that's where they're situated. Within the external covering of, just like Ravana. Just like, Ravana couldn't touch or even see Yogamaya, just the external covering, which is known as Mahamaya. She covers herself by the curtain of Maya. The curtain of Yogamaya is in the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord covers himself with the curtain of Yogamaya. The curtain of Yogamaya means that the spiritual Yogamaya aspect is withdrawn and only the covering aspect is seen of Mahamaya. So the curtain of Yogamaya means that one just experiences the Mahamaya or the material energy in the Gita.
Although Kamsa could see the Yogamaya when she appeared, when he was trying to kill that daughter, eighth daughter of Devaki.
No, he didn't see Yogamaya. He only saw the external covering of Yogamaya, known as Mahamaya. And that is called the curtain of Yogamaya, mentioned in the Gita. So, anyone who executes devotional service in these places certainly goes back home, back to Godhead after giving up his body. Right? That's these words are particularly important. A devotee should fully utilize this instruction to the best of his ability. Whenever the Supreme Lord personally appears, he appears in Mathura because of his intimate connection with this place. Therefore, although Mathura and Vrindavan are situated on this planet Earth, they are transcendental abodes of the Lord. And now we're up to the verse 29. Some time ago, Vasudeva, who belonged to the demigod family or to the Surya dynasty, married Devaki. After the marriage, he mounted his chariot to return home with his newly married wife. Kamsa, the son of Ugrasena, in order to please his sister Devaki on the occasion of her marriage, took charge of the reins of the horses and became the chariot driver. He was surrounded by hundreds of golden chariots. So, Devaki's father, King Devaki, was very much affectionate to his daughter. Therefore, while she and her husband were leaving home, he gave her a dowry of 400 elephants, nicely decorated with golden garlands. He also gave 10,000 horses, 1,800 chariots, and 200 very beautiful young maidservants, fully decorated with ornaments. Oh, beloved son, Maharaj Parikit, when the bride and bridegroom were ready to start the conch shells, bugles, drums and kettle drums all vibrating in concert for their auspicious departure. Yeah. While Kamsa, controlling the reins of the horses, was driving the chariot along the way, an unembodied voice addressed him. "You foolish rascal. The eighth child of the woman you are carrying will kill you." Prabhupada mentions that, you know, in the Krishna book, that when suddenly there was a miraculous sound vibrated from the sky, which was especially announced to Kamsa. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada says the omen spoke of Ashtamol Garbha, referring to the eighth pregnancy, but did not clearly say whether the child was to be a son or a daughter. Even if Kamsa were to see that the eighth child of Devaki was a daughter, he should have no doubt that the eighth child was to kill him. Because Vishwanath Chakrabarti, the core, you know, is saying that the demigods delivered this message. Because they're also wanting Krishna to kill Kamsa. Prabhupada mentions, the demigods, however, did not want Kamsa to be affectionate to Devaki, and therefore, from an unseen position, they encouraged Kamsa to offend her. And Vishwanath Chakrabarti, the core, adds that although through the message it was understood that the six sons of Marichi would be delivered from their curse after being killed by Kamsa. And Prabhupada says that as well. Moreover, the six sons of Marichi had been cursed to take birth from the womb of Devaki, and upon being killed by Kamsa, they would be delivered.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to tell you a little something from Prabhupada's additional notes. And we'll go into it further, but this is just a snippet. So, in general, bear in mind that Kalanimi was the son of Hiranyakashipu in the Manvantara of the six Manu, Chakshusha Manu. Kalanimi fought with the demons alongside Bali Maharaj in that battle.
So Kalanimi was the son of Hiranyakashipu. So
Yeah. Yeah. And in that battle, he was killed when he personally fought with Lord Vishnu in his eight-armed form. So Kalanami had six sons expert in military affairs called the Satgarbhas. So that's just a very brief introduction. Now, in Prabhupada's additional notes, he says, formerly an asura named Kalanami had six sons named Hamsa, Suvikrama, Krata, Dharmana, Ripumarana, and Krodadanta. They were known as the Satgarbhas, or six Garbhas, and they were all equally powerful and expert in military affairs. These Satgarbhas gave up the association of Hiranyakasipu, their grandfather, and underwent great austerities to satisfy Lord Brahma, who upon being satisfied, agreed to give them whatever benediction they might desire. When asked by Lord Brahma to state what they wanted, the Satgarbhas replied, "Dear Lord Brahma, if you want to give us a benediction, give us a blessing that we will not be killed by any demigod, Maharoga, Yaksha Gandhava Pati, Siddha, Charana, or human being, not by great sages who are perfect in their penances and austerities." Brahma understood their purpose and fulfilled their desire. But when Hiranyakasipu had come to know of these events, he was very angry at his grandsons. "You have given up my association and you've gone to worship Lord Brahma," he said. "And therefore, I no longer have any affection for you. You have tried to save yourselves from the hands of the demigods, but I curse you in this way. Your father will take birth as Kamsa and kill all of you because you will take birth as sons of Devaki." Because of this curse, the grandsons of Hiranyakasipu had to take birth from the womb of Devaki and be killed by Kamsa, although he was previously their father. This description is mentioned in the Harivamsa. According to the comments of the Vaishnava Toshani, the son of Devaki, known as Kirtiman, was the third incarnation. In his first incarnation, he was known as Smara and was the son of Marichi and later became the son of Kalanami. So we're going to speak a lot more about those six sons, but that's from what I remember, there was two curses. But anyway, that
who gave the curse? Sorry,
Hiranyakasipu cursed his grandkids.
But did he also pray to Brahma to get powerful?
Mm-hmm. So yes.
Why did he get upset with his grandson doing what he did?
Because he's a demon. That's the simple answer. Yeah. Kamsa was a condemned personality in the Bhoja dynasty because he was envious and sinful. Therefore, upon hearing this omen from the sky, he caught hold of his sister's hair with his left hand and took up his sword with his right hand to sever her head from her body. So he wasn't going to just slap around a bit. So as it says, as soon as he heard that his self-interest or his life was at risk, he forgot all affection for her and immediately became a great enemy. That is the nature of demons. Right? So here you see again, same thing. Yeah. That within a second, it doesn't make sense that they've done something, you know, the same. The moment that somehow their position is being undermined, diminished, then they will just lash out. Everything else has no... This is the nature of demons. No one should trust a demon, despite any amount of affection. Aside from this, a king, a politician, or a woman cannot be trusted, since they can do anything abominable for their personal interests. Now, questionable. Yeah, it is said that Kamsa was the most demoniac of all the Bhoja dynasty kings. So now, Later on we'll hear how, you know, Kamsa's associates, you know, talked him into basically killing the children, even when Kamsa sometimes decided not to. Yeah. So he, although he's born in a very elevated family, actually, a very pious birth, you know, very, because of his association, he was demoniac. And there are many stories about the strength of Kamsa that even the demigods feared him. At an appropriate time, I might go over that, but that's again from the Garga Samhita. And there's several pages about his, you know, the, all the different personalities that, you know, we hear in brief very quickly from the Srimad Bhagavatam how he made alliances. Quite often, sometimes those alliances are made by force, that, you know, he had defeated very powerful personalities and what have you. But another stage, if it's appropriate, we'll look at those from the Garga Samhita. But he's very, very powerful, and even the demigods feared him. So wanting to pacify Kamsa, who was so cruel and envious that he was shamelessly ready to kill his sister, the great soul Vasudeva, who was to be the father of Krishna, spoke to him in the following words. So, as Prabhupada points out, that Vasudeva is speaking with great reason and evidence. So, Mahabhaga, Vasudeva, in the purport, Vasudeva remained sober and unagitated in a peaceful attitude. Vasudeva was a great personality because he knew how to pacify a cruel person and how to forgive even the bitterest enemy. One who is fortunate is never caught even by tigers and snakes. So this Vasudeva, he was greatly fortunate and a great personality. And here that is shown his greatness. You know, someone can be seen as very great when they just simply dealing with those who, you know, the already converted. You know, preaching to the converted, as they say. When someone knows how to handle the greatest opposing demoniac influences, that is a sign of greatness. And we see how he does it here, you know, keeping his composure. Someone asked me the other day, a devotee who has a significant position, that they have to make hard decisions with so many devotees under them. And the people cause so much trouble and ask me how to deal with that. And I was saying, well, number one, you know, we have to execute a service in such a way that what Prabhupada wants is done. And Prabhupada, you know, he was like that. What's going to happen, Prabhupada is not going to compromise. It's going to happen. Unless a compromise is beneficial, and it's the best. But at the same time, then I said, "But so what has to be done? Has to be done. But one should never transgress Vaishnav etiquette with other Vaishnavas, whether they're junior, equals, or superiors." And we see this even with Vasudeva, that what to speak of dealing with Vaishnavas, even dealing with someone like Kamsa, who's a demon, still, one shows one's greatness by the composure by which one deals with great opposition and gets the job done. It's not a sign of composure, it's not a sign of greatness that a person just simply loses their composure transgressing etiquette and forcefully tries to get the job done and yet creates a lot of animosity amongst their associates, superiors or subordinates. And therefore Prabhupada would say that is the sign of a good manager. Everyone is happy. Not that everyone is complaining, the person dealt me so badly in this way, you know, dismissively and so many things. That is not the sign of, you know. It's not the position that's the sign of the greatness, it's the, you know, these qualities that we learn from Vasudeva. Mahabhaga, greatly fortunate. And Prabhupada says that, you know, one who is fortunate is never caught even by tigers and snakes. Now, he's, you know, paraphrasing what Vishwanath Chakravarti, the course, says that how did a cruel person such as Kamsa listen to Vasudeva's advice? Therefore, it's described as Mahabhaga. Even tigers and snakes do not create obstacles when they encounter those possessed of good qualities. So it's the manifestation of good qualities even in those tough situations when you're dealing with highly opposing personalities. Even within ISKCON. Keeping the good qualities. Not reverting to bullying, brutish mentality, pulling rank, and behaving badly, and because someone can't do anything about it. So, of course, you know, that's why we have child protection, devotee care, all sorts of tribunals in ISKCON. In the very infancy stage. Tiny little seedling stage. But that's why we're supposed to have them, let's put it that way. Because, you know, persons, are supposed to act with good qualities. Despite the fact that there is great opposition from even within ISKCON. That's the point. According to the Srimad Bhagavatam, that person is intelligent and successful, like Vasudeva. That person that maintains the etiquette. And you can't maintain etiquette and have bad qualities at the same time. You can't have bad qualities and maintain etiquette. They go hand in hand. So Vasudeva said, "My dear brother-in-law, Kamsa, you are the pride of your family, the Bhoja dynasty, and great heroes praise your qualities. How could such a qualified person as you kill a woman, your own sister, especially on the occasion of her marriage?" Now, Prabhupada mentions in the purport, according to Vedic principles, a brahmana, an old man, a woman, a child or a cow cannot be killed under any circumstances. And he says that not only would Kamsa be implicated in civil activities, but his reputation as a king of the Bhoja dynasty would be damaged. Thus, Vasudeva tried in many ways to convince Kamsa in order to stop him from killing Devaki. We'll see this. That basically, Vasudeva will praise Kamsa, then some diplomatic reasoning through good moral instruction and philosophical discrimination, he'll employ all these different methods. And therefore, in the additional notes, Prabhupada says that when Kamsa was about to kill Devaki, Vasudeva wanted to dissuade him by the diplomacy of Sama and Beda. Sama means pacifying. Right, so the first thing, if there's an aggressive situation, diffuse the situation. Right? As in, you know, then there's some opportunity to go further. Kamsa was infuriated. First, you've got to diffuse that. which we won't go into, but they're away. It's not that difficult, but it's a very good tactic. Thank you. Yeah. Vasudev wanted to pacify Kamsa by indicating relations, gain, welfare, identity, and glorification. Right, so reference to these five concerns constitutes sama, that pacifying. And Vasudeva's presentation of fear in two situations, in this life and the next, is called beta. Thus, Vasudeva used both sama and beta. And we'll look at that. Now, and Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur also notes that if you know, when Vasudeva's praising Kamsa, if you really want to understand what he's saying, you take the opposite. So, text 38. O great hero, one who takes birth is sure to die, for death is born with the body. One may die today or after 100 years, but death is sure for every living entity. Now, Vasudeva's tried a few things, now he's going to logic. Now, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport, Vasudeva wanted to impress upon Kamsa that although Kamsa feared dying and therefore wanted to kill even a woman, he could not avoid death. Okay, so very logical. In the Krishna book, Prabhupada explains that death is born along with your birth. From the very day you took birth, you began to die. And text 39, when the present body turns to dust and is again reduced to five elements, earth, water, fire, air and ether, the proprietor of the body, the living being, automatically receives another body of material elements according to his fruit of activities. When the next body is obtained, he gives up the present body. Now, death is inevitable, and therefore birth is also inevitable. And there are ramifications for both. So death is inevitable. Don't commit sinful activities because you fear death. Death is coming anyway. Also, if death comes, birth will come. So what are the ramifications of your activities, sinful activities? So, text 40, just as a person travelling in the road rests one foot on the ground and then lifts the other, or as a worm on a vegetable transfers itself from one leaf and then gives up the previous one, the conditioned soul takes shelter of another body and then gives up the one he had before. So, he's explaining how birth is inevitable, and here, you know, Vasudeva in one sense, you know, there are many aspects to this, you know. If Kamsa fears death, he'll take birth again. You know, and so therefore, why fear death in that sense? You get another body. Then, if you take a body, you don't want to have all these sinful reactions. But, you know, so there's many different aspects to it. in text 41, having experienced a situation by seeing or hearing about it, one contemplates and speculates about that situation. And thus one surrenders to it, not considering his present body. Similarly, by mental adjustments, one dreams at night of living under different circumstances in different bodies and forgets his actual position. Under the same process, one gives up his present body and accepts another. So Vasudev, yep?
I had a question before. So in the previous verse, it is quite clearly mentioned that one is transferred from one body to the next when the next body is ready.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a whole transition in the example. At the same time, when you see the rites that are performed after the death, there's about 10 days, 11 days of rites. And in certain circumstances, you also mentioned that the soul waits for a bit more of a longer period till it gets the next body. So how can we get concerned?
Well, because the next body is the sum total of all our actions and consciousness in this life. Being the sum total means what I've done today is part of my next body, part of my next body. So that's like one step on the next leaf. What I do tomorrow is also going to be part of my next body. That's the next step. So it's actually accumulative. So although you get your body all at once, it's created accumulative. You know, these things are all stored. You know, your next body is a cumulative result of your actions and consciousness like that. So that's...
So it's not necessarily speaking about that time aspect, that is... The next body is okay. Now, physically, one body is ready means one womb is kind of waiting.
Yeah, so what he's pointing out to Kamsa is that, you know, your actions now, today, is part of what's creating your next body. You know, it's accumulative. You may have done so many other things, what have you. This is also accumulates onto, you know, your next body. So, and gradually what he explains is that the body is given. And in this life, it's our consciousness which creates the activities which accumulates as our next body. So therefore, he's gradually going to explain, you're going to get a next body. And that next body is the accumulation of the activities. And those activities come about because of what your consciousness is. And that consciousness is like a temporarily, you know, absorption in this body. In the same way we become temporarily absorbed in the dream body, our consciousness becomes temporarily absorbed in the next body, but, you know, it's only a temporary body that we're going to get another one. So he's presenting to Kamsa the ultimate conclusion of Vasudeva's statements is what you should fear is not death and not birth, but the consciousness that will cause you to commit simple activities. That's what he should fear, that consciousness. By bringing it back to consciousness means that what Kamsa has to do is to control his anger, and that affects his situation in this life and in the next one, which he can't avoid, and it affects the type of body he has. So basically the whole point of Vasudeva's conversation comes down to stop being so angry now. So he's bringing it back to, it's what you're thinking. So that's basically where he's going. And as we see, even this dream, you know, comparing being infatuated with this body, we do the same thing in a dream. It's just as ridiculous because it'll just disappear. It's like a dream. You think you're Kamsa, there's a dream that disappears. It's an illusion. So it's a ridiculous proposition, and there's so much at stake. To get so absorbed in a dream is foolish. Oh, you know, I'm so angry, and you're just dreaming. It's not even there. You're laying in bed. And he's saying, you're doing this now. So his whole thing is to pacify his anger, the consciousness, and pointing out how foolish it is and the ramifications of it. So as Prabhupada mentions, you know, in the Krishna book, he says, this body is exactly like one of the bodies which we always see in dreams. During our dream sleep, we create so many bodies according to mental creation. We have seen gold and we have also seen a mountain. So in a dream, we can see a golden mountain by combining the two ideas. Sometimes in dreams, we have seen, we have a body which is flying in the sky. Has anyone done that? Yeah, I've done, yeah, you've done that, yeah. You know? Oh, you got to try it. You can literally, you can fly anywhere you want to go, you know, for hours and hours, you know. Anyway, but then when you wake up, you know, you realize you can't fly. So it's a dream body. And at that time, we completely forget our present body. I used to do this thing, I can't help myself, but I used to do this thing where one night, so I used to fly, and then I gradually perfected that flying where I had a magic carpet. You know how they, in the, right, Arabia, Alibaba in the 40 thieves? So I had a carpet and I just sit there, so I didn't have to exert myself even to fly. But I look over the side. So in my dream, I think, you know, it's not too bad, but I had to look over the side. So my next dream, I was on a see-through carpet. So I just look straight down. That's good. Anyway. And at that time, we completely forget our present body, you know, while we're flying our magic carpets. Similarly, these bodies are changing. When you have one body, you forget your past body. During a dream, we make our contact with so many new kinds of bodies, but when we are awake, we forget them all. And actually, these material bodies are the creations of our mental activities. But at the present moment, we do not recollect our past bodies. And so, Krishna, he is coming to the point that these bodies that we're going to take are the creation of our mental activities. And that way, he's trying to pacify his anger. And Prabhupada mentions, you know, a lot about the way this Krishna consciousness movement is based upon, you know, helping people to change their mental activities so they can come to the transcendental.
Okay, Prabhupada, you know how he tells him to be afraid of sinful reactions. Why would someone like Kamsa even care about that kind of argument? He is a sinful person, so he is aware he's doing those kinds of activities.
Mm.
One more doesn't make any difference, does it?
Well,
I mean, we can see that, but I don't know if he could have. Isn't it a wasted argument on somebody like that?
No. Because Vasudeva managed to save Devaki's life.
Yeah, he had to fight for it.
He had to fight to save her life. And the principle is, as you're saying, what is it? What's the principle? No, go on.
What, to fight to save her life?
Yeah.
Yeah, to be in the right. Oh, like that he doesn't just give up, like he's a devotee. No, he's got to say he has a duty to wife and her future children, regardless. So
try his best. That's
he has to try his best.
that's your duty. Yeah. You must.
So, I mean, I got when he was flattering him and everything, because that's the kind of thing that would appeal to someone as egoistic as Kamsa.
He's doing them all. He's doing every possible means.
By doing that, he stopped Kamsa.
He did stop. Yeah. Kamsa actually he never killed Devaki.
No, he didn't, yeah. But I just, when I was reading it, I was thinking, what's the point of telling him about sinful reactions?
Yeah.
He doesn't care.
Well, he did care. He never ever killed Devaki.
Because he would have lost his reputation.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that would appeal to someone like
all of it combined. All of it combined it helps.
Okay.
All of it. Yeah, all of it combined. Because the sinful reaction, Kamsa considered that not only in this life will I lose my reputation, but in the next life I'll be hated as well. So that was the reaction.
So
he did fear.
Accepted that.
He accepted, that the sinful reaction took away his reputation in this life and the next, and so he accepted it.
Yeah.
So it did work. You know, the combination of it, the both. You know, what is the sinful reaction? So that's part of it. So at the time of death, according to the thinking, feeling, and willing of the mind, which is involved in fruitive activities. One receives a particular body. In other words, the body develops according to the activities of the mind. Changes of body are due to the flickering of the mind, for otherwise the soul could not remain in its original spiritual body. And Prabhupada comments on that. There's, look at that, very nice purports about our spiritual process. And here comes, it says, when the luminaries in the sky, such as the moon, sun, and the stars, are reflected in liquids like oil or water, they appear to be different shapes, sometimes round, sometimes long, and so on, because of the movements of the wind. Similarly, when the living entity, the soul, is absorbed in materialistic thoughts, he accepts various manifestations as his own identity because of ignorance. In other words, one is bewildered by mental concoctions because of agitation from the material modes of nature. So he is speaking, about the soul, even Kamsa seems to accept the principle of the soul. So the point being how easy it is, that in the material energy, this body, this identity is really a distorted vision of who we actually are. Therefore, since envious, impious activities cause a body in which one suffers in the next life, why should one act impiously? Considering one's welfare, one should not envy anyone, for an envious person must always fear harm from his enemies, either in this life or in the next. See, so that point really gets him. As your younger sister, this poor girl Devaki is like your own daughter and deserves to be affectionately maintained. You are merciful, and therefore you should not kill her. Indeed, she deserves your affection. See? He's actually thinking, you are the person without a trace of mercy here. Sukadeva Goswami continued, O best of the Kuru dynasty, Kamsa was fiercely cruel and was actually a follower of the Rakshasas. Therefore, he could neither be pacified nor terrified by the good instructions given by Vasudeva, which is your point. He did not care about the results of sinful activities either in this life or the next. Yeah. When Vasudeva saw that Kamsa was determined to kill his sister Devaki, he thought to himself very deeply. Considering the imminent danger of death, he thought of another plan to stop Kamsa. So now he's going to think of another way. He's trying everything. As long as he has intelligence and bodily strength, an intelligent person must try to avoid death. This is the duty of every embodied person. But if death cannot be avoided in spite of one's endeavours, a person facing death commits no offence. Now, Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book that when there is imminent danger, an intelligent person should try to avoid the dangerous position as far as possible. But if, in spite of endeavouring by all intelligence, one fails to avoid the dangerous position, there is no fault on his part. One should try his best to execute his duties, but if the attempt fails, he is not at fault. So, in other places, Prabhupada mentions that if one performs one's duties in Krishna consciousness, you know, regarding family, serving the deities, looking after devotees, if one does that diligently to the best of their ability, then whatever result comes is Krishna's mercy. There is no fault. But whatever negligence is there, whatever result comes, we cannot say that's Krishna's mercy. As soon as we're negligent, that we didn't try to the best of our capacity, we cannot call that result Krishna's mercy.
That's funny, because that's like that guy going, it's God's fault.
Yeah. Yeah, I did a ceremony the other
day.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a ceremony the other day, and a worker came up, and, you know, Aussie worker, said, "What are you cooking up there?" You know, the bananas and the grains, you know, a little bit of mud. And the ghee, they probably thought it was lard or something. But anyway, I said, "Oh, we're doing a protective ceremony, get the blessings of God, because, you know, there's a lot of crazy things going in the world." He said, "That's God's fault."
And
then walked off.
No, I mean, you'd have to think about it.
Maybe. Oh, I'm sure he will. He'll lose sleep over it.
Yeah.
I doubt
that.
Yeah. Vasudeva considered, by delivering all my sons to Kamsa, who is death personified, I shall save the life of Devaki. Perhaps Kamsa will die before my sons take birth. Or, since he is already destined to die at the hands of my son, one of my sons may kill him. For the time being, let me promise to hand over my son so that Kamsa will give up this immediate threat, and if in due course of time Kamsa dies, I shall have nothing to fear. Now, he's thinking in this way. When a fire, for some unseen reason, leaps over one piece of wood and sets fire to the next, the reason is destiny. Similarly, when a living being accepts one kind of body and leaves another aside, there is no reason than unseen destiny. Right? And so sometimes we see, now here, Kamsa is like this destructive fire that's going to destroy everything. But what Vasudeva is thinking is that sometimes that destructive fire leaves one untouched. It goes to another. And, you know, we had these big fires. I always like to watch when there's fires, not because I'm a sadist, but because watching destiny. And, you know, it always happens.
Yeah.
Right? Fire's coming. All the houses are burned down one side. They're all down the other side like that. And this farmer was saying, you know, they were fighting day and night to protect their property. Mm-hmm. Like this great battle. And just when they thought everything was lost, the wind changed and the fire went in a different way. And they understood, they'd given up. We're not going to be able to stop it. And then the wind just changed and took the fire, and his house was completely saved. Destiny. Yeah. So Vasudeva's thinking in these terms. You know, it's inconceivable. Don't give up hope. That's the point. You know, I have to do my duty to, you know, to preserve myself and those I'm responsible for, and to preach Krishna and look after Krishna's interests. And even when it seems impossible, we can't conceive, you know, destiny can just do something inconceivable, and we can't think of how we're going to get out of this situation or what have you, and how things will be better. And by destiny, it happens. That. So that's what he's thinking, and that's a fact. But if those people hadn't fought for their house, they would have lost it.
But it's the same with the illness.
Even though it was a losing battle, if they hadn't have fought, they would have lost it. But it was their duty, you know, to like that.
Sometimes you see people going to give up when they're faced with some form of death.
Yeah.
And others they fight.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But and that's the point.
But it's actually your duty.
Yeah. If they had have said, the fire's coming, leave it to destiny, and were negligent in their duty, they would have lost their house. isn't it? So one has to do one's duty and leave it to destiny. Whatever the result is for a devotee is Krishna's mercy for everyone. So now we're pretty much at time. I think we're just this last point, just fascinating point here, that after thus considering the matter as far as his knowledge will allow, Vasudeva submitted his proposal to the sinful with great respect. Vasudeva's mind was full of anxiety because of his wife was facing danger, but in order to please the cruel, shameless and sinful Kamsa, he externally smiled and spoke to him as follows. So you can imagine him, you know. And Prabhupada says, sometimes one must act duplicitously in a dangerous position, as Vasudeva did to save his wife. Right? The material world is complicated, and to execute one's duties, one cannot avoid adopting such diplomacy. This indicates that one may act duplicitously for the purpose of saving Krishna and his interests. Although all the events were prearranged by Krishna, a devotee must try his best to serve the purpose of Krishna. Krishna himself is all-powerful, but it is not that a devotee should therefore sit idly and leave everything to him. Right? The instruction is also found in Bhagavad Gita. Although Krishna was doing everything for Arjuna, you know, tyam I am, Arjuna never sat idly as a non-violent gentleman. Rather, he tried his best to fight in the battle. And so, you know, again, this is the Sankirtan movement, and we may think, by Lord Chaitanya's arrangement, by Krishna's arrangement, by the arrangement of the deities, everything will be done. Okay, bring on the prasadam, let's just sit back and watch Krishna do it all. But Krishna will do it all. But we actually have to fight like Arjuna. That's our duty, that's what Krishna wants. And that's what Vasudeva's the father of God. And he's, you know, he knows, I must do my duty. So no one is spared. That, you know, it's the Sankirtan movement, Krishna's mercy, don't worry about it, go with the flow. I know devotees who say that. Just go with the flow, you know. Krishna's wonderful like that. That's nonsense. That's hippie philosophy. You ever heard that? Is it this?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hippie philosophy. Is it? It's bogus. It means they don't read the books. Oh, Vasudeva said, I'll just read this one thing. The rest of it wouldn't leave next week. Just to finish that off. Right. But and then we'll move on to chapter 2. But I'll read this one thing again. From the Krishna book. What? Well, as long as I've got 20 students, if everyone's happy, if anyone starts running out, I'll stop. But, yeah. What's that? Yeah, okay, we'll have to stop. We'll stop. Sometimes it happens that a most virtuous person like Vasudeva has to flatter a person like Kamsa, a most vicious person. This is the way of all diplomatic transactions. Although Vasudeva was deeply grieved, he smiled outwardly. He addressed the same as Kamsa, and in that way, because he was so atrocious. So, this is interesting. The most virtuous person, Vasudeva, has to flatter the most sinful, atrocious person. And so, we can't get out of that either. That diplomacy sometimes. What to speak of in ISKCON, as I said, where we, you know, we're not dealing with atrocious persons, we think, but we're dealing with, you know, devotees. So what to speak of there, you know. Anyway, so we'll leave that there. We'll finish this. So we're up to verse 154, and we'll quickly move on through that chapter next week, the conclusion, including part of chapter 1, and we'll go into chapter 2. Wonderful pastime, chapter 2. And we're here. In chapter 2, we hear a lot more of this topic of the six Sadgavas, the sons of, what it all means to us, you know, how Krishna represents the absolute truth and, you know, comes to.
I was wondering when I read the story, why did they give him the warning? Because he calls, like, he really made Devaki and Vasudeva's life a living hell.
Yeah.
And you kind of, okay, even get that the six sons had to die.
They had to die.
But then why did Devaki and Vasudev have to suffer so much?
The demigods wanted Krishna to kill Kamsa as soon as possible. And if Kamsa had have developed a little of... what Kamsa was going to do is unavoidable, but it would just drag the whole thing out a bit. So what Kamsa was going to do, no one was going to stop. But his affection for Devaki would have dragged it out a little longer. And just they wanted him dead because he was a terrifying person, you know.
But it's like how they say your karma comes back to you. There were these two people who were very pure, very pious, and then they're going through so much suffering. You makes you wonder, they didn't do any bad karma to deserve that, to have the death of six children.
Well, Kamsa actually killed his own children.
Yeah, but see, in their life, they still see them as their children.
Yeah, yes.
So Devaki,
but they got them back.
Later,
yes,
she
did.
She got
his six sons back.
Later on.
Did she?
Yes, she did. And we're going to hear all about that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
To be continued. Stay tuned to this channel.
Can you call
them? Yes, call them. Thank you. Yeah, as babies. They come back as little babies. And they got to drink.
Grandson.
The six sons.
Oh, sorry.